So welcome to our afternoon session where we'll be talking about herbs. And the psalm that tells us about herbs is Psalm 104 verse 14, where it says, God made herbs for the service of man. And in a study of herbs, one begins to see that, and of course in the study of the herbs, what you do is you study the actions of the herb, and you also study the components of the herb. And as you do this, you begin to see that every herb has a different effect on different parts of the body. So as I go through this, I'll be looking at herbs, but I'll also be looking at different body parts and the herbs that can help with that. But what I'd like to begin with today, I'd like to begin with slippery elm. Now, slippery elm is the powdered bark of the slippery elm tree. And slippery elm can be used externally and it can be used internally. And yesterday, one of the last poultices we did was a combination of slippery elm and charcoal. Do you remember that? And that was a poultice used for a variety of things. Yeah, bee stings, wasp bites, any case of poisoning. I also mentioned that it can be used for a very upset stomach. It could also be used for a congested chest. I did also mention that Jethro Kloss, in his book Back to Eden, he says that the slippery elm is one of the deeper drawers. I did talk about castor oil yesterday, that it penetrates very, very deep, but the castor oil is totally different. It's not drawing anything out. So it's important to know the differences. It comes from the castor oil plant. The castor oil penetrates very deep. It breaks up lumps, bumps, congestions, adhesions, scar tissues. The slippery elm goes deep, but it draws. It's a drawer. So that's where it can be used externally. The slippery elm can also be used on the scalp. And to use it on the scalp, now the herb that is a specific for all scalp issues, so we might look at scalp for a moment, for all scalp issues is rosemary. And this is rosemary essential oil. The essential oils are expensive, but please remember, that it takes about a whole bucket of the herb to get almost one drop of the oil, so no wonder they're expensive. But it's important to remember that, realizing that they're also very, very strong. So your scalp herb is your rosemary. Does it have to be an essential oil? You can make a tea with that, but of course it won't be as strong. But then again, you could bring it to the boil and slowly simmer a lot of rosemary in a little water, and you can certainly make it a lot stronger. So anything to do with the head, you would use rosemary essential oil. So with the scalp, we've got a few issues there, and one can be head lice. So with head lice, you can paint the scalp with slippery elm. You put water with it to make it like a soft gel. But with head lice, so we're looking at slippery elm, we're making, these are all the things you can do with slippery elm when we're looking at the scalp. So with slippery elm, if you're going to use it for head lice, you've got to put something in there that's incredibly strong. So you can use thyme oil. So thyme essential oil is very, very strong. And the head lice hate it. So what you can do is you could make, let's say for this you would do half a cup of slippery elm. And in that half a cup you might put 1.5 cups of water. So in that mix, you might put probably 6 drops of thyme essential oil. And that's very, very strong, but you've got about 1.5 cups of gel. And how would you paint the scalp? What you do is you, and before I was a psychiatric nurse, I was a hairdresser. So when we used to dye hair, we'd divide the head into sections, and then we'd put the comb in and paint one bit, and then paint another bit, and then paint another bit. So you get the gist, so that the whole head is covered with this mixture that can kill head lice. And then you would keep that all wrapped up. You could put a shower cap on or plastic bag round and tie it in a knot. You would want to keep it there for about 4 hours. So head lice, it can be used for that. What about if someone's got a very dry scalp, dandruff, or sometimes psoriasis in the scalp? The slippery elm can be excellent for cleaning that up and nourishing it. So what you would do then is you'd do a similar amount of this, but this time you'd put the rosemary essential oil in, because the rosemary essential oil is very nourishing to the scalp. So let's say dry scalp, eczema. Some people do experience eczema in the scalp. Then you would do the slippery elm and the rosemary. What about hair loss? So for hair loss, an excellent mixture for hair loss would be probably 1/4 cup of coconut oil and 1/4 cup of the castor oil. Yeah. And then rosemary. So with the rosemary essential oil, oh, you're probably looking at about 6 drops. And what the person does is they massage that into their scalp, tie it up in a knot, and try and leave that all day. Someone said, can I sleep with it? Well, if you want, you can sleep with it. And then when it's washed out, be very cautious on the shampoo you use. And I'm going to give you a name of what you never want in your shampoo. It's called sodium lauryl sulfate. And sodium lauryl sulfate is what they usually put into shampoo, sometimes even put it into toothpaste, to make it foam. And what sodium lauryl sulfate, it's a chemical that kills the hair follicles. So you don't want that. If you're not sure what the names are on your products, Google them, which is, it's not hard to do, yeah?
Have you also a recipe when we would like to make our own shampoo?
I don't have a recipe for making your own shampoo, but remember the guy with the big orange woolly hair and beard? He just washes everything with sodium bicarbonate. I have heard that you can wash your hair with aloe vera, and apparently it'll even soap up. I live at Misty Mountain Health Retreat. We have an incredible range of natural shampoos and conditioners.
I have a book that talks about just using oil with essential oils to wash your hair with.
Well, you could try it. It's worth a try. 1 Thessalonians 5:21, prove all things. And I'll fast to that which is good. Yeah?
I've tried to make some shampoo and I made it after soap recipe. And this is N-A-O-H. And then I was on Facebook and asked some ladies and they said for liquid soaps you need K-A-O-H. But I don't know where to get it. And then I read it has a lot of chemicals in it.
Mm. Yes, it's...
It's potassium hydroxide and sodium hydroxide. And it's really... really potent.
It is really potent. When you make the soap, I have made some, it has to wait 4 to 6 weeks before you can use this soap.
It's not about a chemical, it's just one chemical, usually if it's that. And it's really, really strong.
I know.
Now with hair loss, what does Ellen White say in page 127 whenever there's a health condition? Ascertain the cause. Yep. Sometimes hair loss can be because of a hormonal imbalance. Sometimes people can have drastic hair loss after huge stress. And sometimes hair loss can be because of, in fact, I've got a close friend and she straightened her hair. She's a black American lady. She straightened her hair after 20 years of straightening her hair. Those chemicals, little by little, were killing the hair follicles. And also the amazing hairdos that I see in the African countries, the tightness and the weight of those little braids can certainly cause some hair loss. So again, you have a look at what may be the cause. Because if you don't turn the tap off, you're still going to be mopping up in the other corner.
Now we see that a lot of after corona, people have really bad hair loss.
Okay, after corona. If someone has bad hair loss, if they've got new hair coming through and you can see the tiny new growth, you can assure the person the news coming. I'd ask to look now at how you can use it internally. Slippery elm internally. So slippery elm, and I mentioned this yesterday, slippery elm contains a growth stimulant, and that growth stimulant stimulates rapid healing. So not only does slippery elm contain a growth stimulant, slippery elm, it coats and it soothes and it heals the lining of the gastrointestinal tract. So it's a wonderful herb to give to people if they've got a sore throat. And I mentioned that 3 weeks ago when I was in Scotland, I had a sore throat, and that certainly helped. It sometimes was enough to get to ease it, to be able to sleep at night. Slippery elm coats and soothes and heals wherever it goes. We had a lady who had her esophagus was ulcerated. Why was her esophagus ulcerated? She had a very bad case of reflux. And when we go on our journey through the gut, I'm going to address reflux in detail. So what we did was before she went to bed every night, we gave her slippery elm. And the best way to mix it is 1 teaspoon in a cup of hot water. Must be hot, because if you mix it in cold water, it can go a little lumpy. You could even mix it in half a cup of boiling water and mix it quickly and then add the cold, and then it'll go a bit smooth. Not many people are like my son, Peter, who liked it lumpy. It's much easier to take when it is smooth. And I always say to the staff, if we've got someone on slippery elm, wait till they're standing in front of you, mix it up and give it to them, because the longer it sits, the thicker it gets. Do you remember when I was making that charcoal poultice yesterday, that I kept having to add water? Because the longer that charcoal sat, the thicker it got. So for the person with the ulcerated esophagus, again, you've got to ascertain the cause and assess the reflux. And that little muscle that goes into the stomach, it can be relaxed, because when it's relaxed, it's closed, and it's magnesium that relaxes it. Remember this morning with the questions and answer, and I said we use magnesium a little bit? That's one of the areas we use magnesium, and the magnesium that we use is magnesium citrate, and that's the easiest magnesium to absorb into the body, easily absorbed. And we gave her slippery elm before every meal and before bed at night. And that brought almost instantaneous relief. Yes?
I have had these tablets to suck on with magnesium in it for my reflux, and it helps also.
Yeah, yeah. And you can see why. Because it relaxes that muscle that goes into the stomach from the esophagus. As you will see when we go on our journey through the gastrointestinal tract. But also, what we had to address was the food she was eating, making sure there was nothing that irritated. So you've also got to do all of that. So we gave her Cyprion before every meal and before she went to bed at night. And remember, it's got a growth stimulant. So when you have it, well, when this lady had it before she went to bed at night and she's swallowing it, can you see remnants of it sticking and lining that gut? And so that growth stimulant can begin to work. But to have an ulcerated esophagus, that didn't happen overnight. And that's another illustration that many are sick through ignorance. They are not sure what to do for these simple things. Great. So with the Cyprion, that can be used for ulcers in the stomach, an ulcerated stomach. It will coat, soothe and heal the lining of the gut. Yes?
And also in the colon?
We're getting there. We're only up to here now. Now... coming down, and most problems are in the colon because the contents of the small intestine is liquid. So when we come through to the colon, so we've got problems like irritable bowel syndrome, Crohn's disease, colitis, gastritis. They are all inflammation of the gastrointestinal tract. And the different names usually apply to different areas of the gastrointestinal tract. And it'll coat and soothe and heal the lining of the gut. When someone has a very severe case of Cyprion, of colitis, how would you know they had a severe case? They're going 10 times a day. And the faeces... it should not be liquid and it should not be like rabbit pellets. It should be soft with a little bit of form. One of our guests said, I've never talked about such things so much. But there's some of the signs as to what your body's doing. Now, if in the feces there are partially digested foods, that's an indication that the food's not getting digested properly up here. If the feces is dark, very dark, it can indicate that there's bleeding higher up. If there's fresh blood in the feces, it can indicate that maybe it's hemorrhoids, because if it's fresh blood, it'll just be near the exit of the feces. But we have had some guests, in fact, we had one last night, I'm bleeding. And then we check, but you had beetroot juice yesterday. Sometimes it's beetroot juice. It's as simple as that. And if someone is going 10 times a day, they can take the Cyprion every hour. You can't overdo it. It's such a safe herb. You cannot overdo it. Now, if someone has a very severe case and need a little bit extra, maybe it's quite chronic, we do 80% golden seal. Golden seal is a root. It's grown in forests in Europe and it takes 7 years to grow before it can be harvested. And it's one of, I think frankincense is your most expensive herb that you can buy, but the golden seal is not far behind it. It's very, very expensive, but you do not need very much. So a few things about golden seal. Sorry, that's not right. It's 80% Cyprion and it's 10% golden seal. And I'm going to show you why we put this in the mix, and it's 10% myrrh. Myrrh is a gum resin. And so often you'll buy myrrh as like little lumps. Remember, it's a gum resin, comes from the gum of a tree. So we put it in a little coffee grinder and grind it up to be able to make this mix. Golden seal is a root, and you might be able to buy as a powder. But if you can't buy as a powder, they're very fine roots. You can also blend that up, because for this you need the powders. So we mix that up in a jar, and we have given that the name gut repair. So that's our recipe for gut repair. Now, the reason we use the golden seal is because golden seal, he has a nickname. He's called King of Tonics to all mucous membranes. But not only is it the King of Tonics to all mucous membranes, what does this mean? It means that when it's going and touching the mucous membrane, it is stimulating healing and it's toning it. When you mix the slippery elm, it's slimy. I guess slippery is a nice way to say slimy. But it needs to be in the gastrointestinal tract, because the whole of our gastrointestinal tract is lined with mucus. Not only do we use this golden seal because it's King of Tonics to all mucous membranes, it's a very wide-range antimicrobial. So what that means is it's antifungal, it's antibacterial. So if there's any unwanted pathogens there, it can wipe them out. I had a lady on gut repair who'd had irritable bowel for many years. She changed her diet, as we'll see when we go through the journey of the gut. Changing the diet is also very important. Remember the five allergens? They appear to be incredibly irritating to the gut when it's in an inflamed state. So soft food, sometimes when someone's got irritable bowel, you can't even give them raw food. So they can't, the raw carrot, it's just too harsh on the gut. And they might even have to eat white rice because you've got to be very, very tender to that gut when it is so inflamed. So we had a lady who came to our program. She was eating the very food that was inflaming it. She didn't know. And we gave her the gut repair, which is this mix here. And she rang me up about 2 months later. She said, "I'm so much better." She said, "I'm not bleeding from the colon anymore." She said, "I don't have the cramping anymore." She said, "I'm so much better." But she said, "I ran out of gut repair, so I just bought some slippery elm." But she said, "It's not as good. I want gut repair." So for some people, the slippery elm is enough. And for those who are a little bit more serious, then we go over to gut repair. And you can see why we add the golden seal. It's a powerful herb. It's very expensive. I have it because there's almost nothing that is as good as golden seal. It's very good. Yes?
How many times do you take it and how much?
It all depends. If someone's going 10 times a day and are bleeding from the colon and are getting cramping, you can give it to them every hour. And as things settle down, you ease back, maybe too early, maybe 3 times a day, and then just before bed at night. So you play with it. Remember what you're looking for. You're looking for the response. Sometimes with the tea that we give our guests, most people on the fasting days, they just go as they usually go. But occasionally we get someone who'll go 5 times in the morning. And I'll say, "Take some slippery elm, that'll slow it down a little bit." And they said, "I took it, but it didn't work." Well, you need more. Can you see that? You need more. So I said, take it every half hour until things slow down. Ah, that worked. So you're training the people because people don't know. They're totally ignorant. If someone says, the colon tea doesn't work for me, so I say, well, you need more. Some people need one cup, some people need three cups, and we'll look at that in detail when we go on our journey through the gut. But I want to take Golden Seal aside for a moment and show you where else it can be used. Because it's king of tonics to all mucous membranes, you use it wherever there's mucus. So let's begin up here with the eye. So eyes. There's a herb called eyebright. And eyebright can be used for all eye problems. It doesn't matter what the problem is. You can use eyebright. And it's a fine leaf. And we put that with, so what's the eyeball floating in? A mucousy fluid. So what will we use? Because it's king of tonics to all mucous membranes. Can you see that? So we use Golden Seal as well. Now the rule of thumb for herbs is 1 teaspoon to 1 cup of water. That's the rule of thumb. And sometimes, as you'll see, there might be a variation, but that's the rule of thumb. In the majority of cases, that's what you do. It's like the grated ginger we did yesterday, put teaspoon, cup of water. To me, that's just right. For some, it's too hot. Haven't met anyone that says it's not hot enough yet. So usually 1 teaspoon for a cup. So with this mix, what they're going to do is they're going to pour boiling water on it, and they can when the Golden Seal is just a powder. But if the Golden Seal comes in a root form, that needs to boil. So let me show you with herbs. You always boil the root and the bark and the berries. Whereas when you have just got a dried leaf, you just pour boiling water on and then put a cover on it and it seeps. So you pour the boiling water on the leaf and the flowers. So what we've got here, we've got leaf and we've got a root. You can pour boiling water on it if it's a powder, because it's so ground up, just letting it sit will be able to extract what the active ingredients out of it. But if it's a root, then you would boil that. So let's say we do 1/4 teaspoon, and you can do any amount, 1/4 teaspoon of this and 1/4 teaspoon of the eyebright and 1/4 teaspoon of the Golden Seal. Let's say it's in a root. Well, 1/4 teaspoon, then you'd go with 1/2 cup, wouldn't you? Because that comes to 1/2 teaspoon, so now you've got 1/2 cup of water. So what you would do is you would boil the Golden Seal root in 1/2 cup of water. It's always a very gentle simmer. I always boil my herbs in glass, Pyrex glass. Now we go to the second hand shops and get X coffee percolators. They're perfect. I've even had so many people send them to me. We've got about a dozen of them now. Because you can get a bit of a reaction with the stainless steel. And if you ever go to a Chinese doctor and get his herbs, he will specify, don't cook up the herbs in stainless steel. You want them in glass or ceramic. So ideally. So you would gentle simmer. Not a furious boil. I just bring it to the boil, turn it down very low, put the lid on, always the lid on, and let it simmer. It's usually 10 minutes is enough. 10 minutes is usually enough, and it's a gentle simmer. And then when you turn the heat off, then you would put the eyebright leaf in and then put the lid on again. And what you do with this tea is you let it cool, and when it's cold, then you strain it. And then you wash the eyes with a little eye bath. And you might wash the eye 3 times a day, maybe. Why would you wash the eye with this tea mix? You would do it for cataracts. You would do it for glaucoma. You would do it for dry eyes. You would do it for red eyes. So any complaint in the eye. And why have we put the golden seal in, students? Because it's king of tonics. Yeah, it's king of tonics to the mucous membranes. So you need to know why. Where are you, why? We need to know why. Now, you know what? You might give this tea to half a dozen people and no one will ask why, but then someone will ask why. So it's important to know. And they will have confidence in you when you're able to explain why you're doing it. Because the worst thing you can say is, oh, it's good for your eyes. We've had a few guests come into our program who've complained of dry eyes, sore eyes, they've got eye drops, the eye drops sting, but they're not really helping. And then they wash their eyes with this. And I leave it to them. If twice a day is enough, twice a day. If 3 times enough feels better, 3 times a day. Remember, you're the... We teach that everyone should be their own doctor because only you know your response or how it feels. And by the end of the week, we have guests saying to us, my eyes have never been so good. The dry eyes, the itchy eyes have cleared up. So it's a very powerful mix. So for glaucoma and cataracts, they might be done 3 times a day. And in the evening, might put the castor oil over. So that's a very nice combination. So what we're going to do now is we're going to keep going down the head. So now we come to the sinus. And you'll find many people with sinus problems. And in the Mayo Clinic in the 1990s, a group of doctors discovered that sinus problems are due to fungus. And we had an ear, nose and throat specialist nurse to our program and she said, you wouldn't believe the green slime we pull out of people's sinuses. And she said the doctors acknowledge it is a fungus. So what? Why is it growing there? Why? It's usually because the person has a wheat, dairy, might be oat, peanut allergy. And whenever there's an allergy, excess mucus. Have you heard people snorting? People snort a bit when they're, you know, the snort. They might do it when they've got a cold, but some people just do it all the time. Mm-hmm. Do you know that? You know what that tells me straight away? They've got an allergy. Because when there's an allergy, the body makes excess mucus. So if a person's eating these foods and they've got this excess mucus blowing their nose all day, or maybe blowing it every morning, that tells me they've got an allergy. But do you know what else is happening? They don't know that. Sometimes people think this is life, I just do this. So what's happening up here? We're getting a little bit of irritation, we're getting a little bit of damage. Now our cells evolve into a bacterial and then fungal form to clean up the waste. Can you see the evolution of the fungal developing there? That's the main reason. Because if fungus is living up there, there's a reason. Sometimes it can be breathing in mold or breathing in chemicals, causing irritation there, causing the excess mucus. And sometimes that's fed because the person's drinking Coca-Cola every day. Can you see it can be a whole lot of factors? So to To heal sinus, number one, in case of sickness, cause should be ascertained. Number two, wrong habits corrected, unhealthful conditions changed, get out of the moldy house, change job so you're not breathing in chemicals all day, change the diet. Then nature is to be assisted in her efforts to expel impurities and re-establish right conditions in the body. And what they can do is they can breathe in hot steam, you know, that old hot steam. But you know what, most people, they get relief while they're breathing in the hot steam with maybe a bit of eucalyptus oil on, but you notice 10 minutes later it's clogged again. The reason is they don't end the treatment with cold, ice cold wipes over their face. Because they finish the treatment, now they've got these open pores and this hot skin that can chill against cold air. Every hot treatment should be finished with cold water. But what they can also do is they can sniff golden seal powder. Because what's our sinus lined with? Mucus. And remember what mucus is? What the tonic to mucus is? Golden seal. So we get them to put a little bit. See, there's a little dip in the hand there, and it's traditionally was called the snuff dip, because in the old days people would put their snuff there and sniff. So they can use their little snuff dipper. I've got quite a nice one. Nice little dip there. But what you have to do is they have to go to a mirror so that they can see when their nostril is over their little snuff dip. And you just put the tiniest amount in. You only want to put a tiny amount in. Remember, this stuff's expensive and you don't need much. Just a tiny little pinch. And they don't go, otherwise they'll feel like the top of their head's going to explode. It's just little sniffs. Just little by little sniff it up, and you can tell when it's hit the mark because there's a bitterness in the back of their throat. And then a little bit more on, and I was doing one lady one day. She said, "Is this right?" and breathed out in the golden seal. Oh, no, no, no. We don't want to lose the golden seal. It's like gold. It's like gold dust. It's the colour of gold dust, actually. It's brilliant yellow. So how often would they do that? Or they could do that, you know, 2 or 3 times a day. If it brings relief, do it more. Encourage them not to blow their nose for about 10 minutes. Let it sit up there. Keep sniffing. Keep it up and maybe then blow their nose. And when they blow their nose, it'll be fluorescent yellow from the golden seal snuff. Now, what are we doing there? King of tonics to all mucous membranes. It helps those mucous membranes to heal, but it cleans it up. You see that? So this nurse that came to us, that was a ear, nose and throat specialist nurse, they get the same people coming back every 5 years to have this clean out. So if you don't turn the tap off, the whole problem's going to continue. So we had a lady attend our program, and she had very, very painful sinus to the point that she was on painkilling medication every day. She was probably about 38. She was a little overweight. And we looked at her diet. Yeah, tick, tick, tick. Yes, she's eating all the allergens. She didn't know. So she came back a year later. And, you know, we told her what to do, stop the foods, start sniffing the golden seal, and she started to do that with us. She came back a year later, and when she came in, I didn't know it was her. She'd lost 10 kilos. She looked amazing. She said, "You don't remember me, do you?" And I said, "I'm trying." And as she spoke, I started to recognize her face. She said, "My life has just turned around." She said, after leaving Misty Mountain, she said, "I have not taken one painkiller." You see, the pain was due to the sinus, the block in the sinus. She said, "I've lost weight, as you can see." She said, "You wouldn't believe the quality of life I now have. Do you know life should be good?" It should be good every day of our life. She said to me, my mother was getting very concerned. She thinks I lost too much weight. Mind you, she looked good. So she insisted I have blood tests. She said the blood tests come back perfect. It was a lovely story of how someone struggled for so long and yet had an incredible turnaround. Mouth ulcers. Remember, we're looking at all the mucus areas that golden seal can help, yes?
I just wanted to say, I like what Simon said, is to do cold, hot and cold.
Yes.
It's really good.
The hot and cold is very good. That is true. And, of course, the hot steam is hot, but most people miss out on the cold. So let's go to mouth ulcers. Rinsing the mouth with some golden seal tea after a meal, and also before bed, because remember, whatever you do in there before bed, you'll get remnants while you sleep. Let's go down into the stomach, stomach ulcer. You add golden seal to the slippery elm, and it helps to heal the stomach ulcer. Irritable bowel, we just mentioned those, Crohn's disease, colitis. UTI, urinary tract infection. When they take the golden seal, it comes out in the urine. So it disinfects the whole way down as it goes through the urinary system and the kidneys. Yes?
I was asking about that. Do you have additional remedies for urine infection?
So for UTI, and you can get golden seal in a tablet form. It is incredibly bitter. So a lot of people prefer to take it in a capsule or a tablet form. I personally think in a capsule it's too much and it's a waste. So half a capsule at a time is enough. Yeah.
Why is it too much?
Well, it's so expensive. You try and buy it. It's incredibly expensive.
I can only buy it in America.
And half a teaspoon, half a teaspoon is a little bit much. That's why I say just have half a capsule at a time. So with UTI, cranberry. Now, how cranberry works is that it causes a slippery coating on the lining of the bladder, making it incredibly hard for any microbes to hold on to the wall of the bladder. That's basically how it works. So you put cranberry and golden seal together, you get a very nice mix for a urinary tract infection.
That's powdered cranberry.
Well, cranberry is incredibly bitter. So most cranberries that you buy, dried cranberries, they've got sugar in them. I went into Trader Joe's in the US once, which is a big health store, and I'm looking at all the cranberries. There was not one that did not have sugar in it. So you're almost best to buy the tablet. They're almost inedible. They're so bitter. So bitter. But if you can get dried cranberries without sugar, you can certainly do it. I have seen cranberries that have been dried with apple juice, so they're not so bitter.
You wouldn't know if the Swedish lingonberry could be used. It's similar to cranberry, but it's not the same.
Okay, so maybe that's an option. Yep. So looking at all the areas where you can use the golden seal, it's a remarkable herb. There's one other area we use it, and that is in a tea. We call it digestive tea. In fact, we affectionately call it Dij tea at Misty Mountain. And we give this to every single one of our guests. We've had incredible results with the digestive tea. And it is one part dandelion, and it's one part licorice, one part gentian, that very bitter herb, and it is half a part golden seal. So these are all roots, so they need to be boiled. But you'll buy the dried herbs and you mix it together in a jar. We cannot buy golden seal at the moment. It's very hard to get golden seal. So our office girl was able to find capsules, so we're opening the capsules. So the rule of thumb is, remember, 1 teaspoon of these dried herbs to 1 cup of water, and because they're roots, you've got a 10-minute simmer. And then you let it sit. And it's the sitting while it's hot, more of the properties are going into the water, yeah?
Is there a reason why peppermint is not included, or even fennel? Isn't that well known for digestion?
Yeah, they help. There's quite a few things that help with digestion, but we've just gone for the bitter roots. And the dose is 1/4 cup hot just before the meal. Dr. Kellogg said a great way to boost digestion is to have 1/4 cup of very hot water just before the meal. The hot water going into the stomach stimulates the release of the digestive juices. So we've gone one step further and made it a hot, bitter tea. And when that bitter tea is in the mouth, it's already stimulating. The message goes to the brain, the liver starts releasing more, your parietal glands, the glands in your stomach start releasing the digestive enzymes. We've talked a little bit about low hydrochloric acid, and this is a great hydrochloric acid booster, is the digestive tea. I give it to my husband every morning. I have it every morning when I'm at home. And as I said, I've got a very good husband. He'll do whatever I tell him. He said he doesn't actually mind it now. Most people, the first time they drink it, they go, oh! Because it is bitter. But the licorice gives it a bit of sweetness. So what I have been covering is the golden seal. We've also helped a few people that have got very stubborn ulcers. And ulcers often happen with diabetics on the shin. And the reason they happen on the shin is because the blood supply there is quite poor. So we had a lady bring her mother, and her mother was in a wheelchair. We have one room that has disabled access. But when someone is like that, we say to people, we are not a hospital. So if someone needs care, they have to bring a carer with them. Because remember, what we are is teachers, teaching people how to be their own doctors. It would be certainly wonderful if we had a hospital that did that. And I've been reading the autobiography of a Dr. Gertrude Brown, who was trained with Dr. Kellogg at Battle Creek Sanitarium. So this is the mid-1800s, late 1800s. And she said, she worked there for 6 years. She said it was the most wonderful place to work, was Battle Creek. Have you heard of Battle Creek? They had 1,000 beds. Yeah. Huge. And they said Dr. Kellogg was an excellent surgeon, but he rarely did surgery. He did everything possible. Surgery was the very last resort. It was so nice to read that. And she also said in her autobiography, she said Dr. Kellogg was a living example of the health message. Isn't that nice? Wouldn't you like that said of yourself? Remember, ye are our epistles, known and read of all men. And the staff all read that man, and he was a testimony. So it has happened before that there has been basically a health retreat / hospital that did implement these principles. And what also she said was many sick people would go there, and she said they would walk out. She said, I've worked in many hospitals. She was the matron in a big hospital in London for a while, and then in her 40s she went to Edinburgh, and her husband both trained as doctors. She said, I have never seen anywhere like Battle Creek. The people would walk out healthy. She said, I've never seen a hospital like that. Dr. Gertrude Brown. And my Scottish mum, Ruth, she met Dr. Gertrude Brown. So she was telling me her story. So I said to her, I'd love to. She said, I've got her book. And in the front of the book, I've actually got it in my room. I'll bring it down if you like. Dr. Gertrude Brown has written in there. It's a thrilling story, so thrilling. Unfortunately, the pharmaceutical company is so big now, it's almost impossible to have such a place. So what we do is we have little health centres. And isn't that the best way, just one-to-one? So I was talking about ulcers. So we've had some stubborn ulcers. So this lady brought her mother, she was 80, had a really stubborn ulcer. So what you do is clean it out with hydrogen peroxide. Something else you can clean it out with is seawater. And to make seawater, a cup of Celtic salt to 1 teaspoon of seawater. So I noticed you don't live near the sea.
Yeah, you mix it?
And if
one
you...
cup of it.
Pardon?
1 cup of water, I believe, too.
Yeah.
1 teaspoon of salt, Celtic salt, yep. Yeah. And you can wash it with that, and then you put it in the sun. Do you know, in the old days, they used to wheel... This is Florence Nightingale. Wheel the patients out onto the veranda and put their bed sores and their ulcers in the sun.
Yeah.
In the sun. The sun is a wonderful healer. So that was part of it. And then we would sprinkle a mix inside the ulcer of equal parts golden seal and cayenne pepper. Because one of the problems with an ulcer is that the blood supply is very poor to the area. And what does cayenne pepper do? Moves blood. And what's the blood? It's the life of the flesh. Within 1 week, it was just incredible, the response we saw. Most people, when you sprinkle the golden seal and cayenne pepper powder, they don't feel the cayenne, because that's one of the problems, you know, they don't have a blood supply, and the blood supply feeds the nerves. And little by little, we saw it shrink up. And we have seen many ulcers heal with that, and people, I've told them what to do and they've got back to me and they've said, wow, this is remarkable. Now you can see why we're doing this. The cayenne pepper's to bring the blood, and the blood's the healer, and the golden seal, king of tonics, and also a strong antimicrobial. I was talking to a lady in Scotland last week who 10 years ago used to work in an aged care facility, and she told me they used to use maggots to clean up wounds. Have you heard that? She said we'd get the maggots in little containers, and she said you'd sprinkle it onto the wound and they're like little threads, and you'd wrap it up and leave it 24 hours, and when you opened it up, she said they're all like fat grubs. And she said the wound was clean. From the blowfly. What's your Swiss word for that? I don't know. Do you know blowflies?
No.
Do you know when you've got something dying, the blowflies all lay their maggots? Yeah, those little horrible crawly things.
So could it just be a normal housefly?
No. No, it has to be a blowfly. The maggots come from the blowfly. Oh. And apparently they used to use it in the war. If they had wounds that wouldn't heal, they would let the blowfly lay the maggots. Anyway, this Scottish lady was telling me that's what they did. Blowfly? That's what we call it. I don't know what you call it. Do you know they say don't leave meat out or a blowfly will land and the maggots will start to eat it? Does anyone understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
Oh, good.
So how often do you use this?
You might do it 3 times a day. So I think we've exhausted golden seal. Now I'd like to look at aloe vera. There are 3 herbs that contain a growth stimulant. One is slippery elm, and one is aloe vera. Have you ever cut a leaf of aloe vera or cut the tip of a leaf? Have you noticed how quickly a skin grows? That's because it's got a growth stimulant in it. I call aloe vera God's skin cream. I used to use it if my babies had nappy rash. Just open the leaf and just slime it all over them. But where it's particularly helpful is for burns. And we've seen some remarkable responses with burns. So our maintenance man, Dave, and I know Casper knows Dave Bongi, Aboriginal man, he was burning off a whole lot of rubbish and trees, and it wasn't burning properly, so he got petrol. And the flames came up, got his face, got his arm, and real badly on the leg. So he didn't tell anyone, and he just went home and had a shower, and his brother came in and saw him sitting in the and so called one of the staff, and they quickly got aloe, and they opened the aloe and just sliced out the gel and put it here and there. And then they called me about an hour later because he was still in a lot of pain, and they said, we think that we need to take him to hospital. And when I heard that, I said, hang on, let's have a look. And what I did, and this is very important, is you don't take the aloe out of the leaf. So you must leave the leaf intact, because if you take the gel out, when it's time to change the dressing, the edges will have stuck. And one of the worst things you can do with burns is have something that's going to dry, and then you rip the skin even more. So what I did was I had a crowd, because they're all thinking we need to take him to hospital, and there was one area on his leg that I could tell had gone down the three layers of skin and was down to the flesh. So what we did was we've got a lot of aloe vera at Misty Mountain. So we cut the leaf and we did like a jigsaw on his leg. Can you see like that? And so we had a few people, because it's so slimy, it's trying to move around. Now you cut off the spikes on the edge. So you just cut it down the middle and open it. And if you leave the skin intact, that will never dry out. That's a very important point. It will not dry out. So a lot of people have used it, but they've just taken the gel out, put it on, bandaged it up, but then they go to change the dressing and then the edges dry out. So what we did was we put that, and I kept saying, Dave, it's okay. He's like this. So we did it all over his leg. We did it all up his arm. Bit hard to put it on his face, so we just rubbed it on his face. His face actually wasn't that bad, but of course it's painful. So we rubbed it on, and you just keep rubbing it on, and it'll make a little bit of a skin too. You can, have you ever put aloe vera on your skin? Mm-hmm. It's slimy, but then it's probably only about 20 minutes and you've got a skin on there. And then we asked God to bless it. We bandaged the whole thing on. And he smiled, and the pain level's gone. I think it was 10 out of 10 when I got to him. He was not good, but he was holding on. And it was down to about 8 out of 10 when I left. And this was probably 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I didn't hear anything, so I thought all is good. And he said it came to about 4 out of 10 by the time he went to bed. And I said, don't move it. I'll come and dress it again in 24 hours. So if you want a shower, put a glad, but remember he'd gone home and had a shower, so he just had a shower. There was probably no need for him to have another shower till another 24 hours. And when I went in the morning, he was just sitting in the chair smiling at me. What does that tell you? I said, what are your pain levels? He said, it's probably only 1 or 2 out of 10. That's incredible, isn't it? So that what you've got to do with a burn, you've basically got to stop the air getting to it, because the air on it can be very painful.
So with that case, it was only one compress of aloe vera?
No. We changed it. We changed it after 24 hours. We put a whole lot of more leaves on. and he could handle the dressing change. You know, sometimes the dressing change is very painful, but you know, there was no sticking at all, and the aloe had kept it moist and slimy and beautiful. And we changed it. I think we only did that twice. So I saw him on the third day, and he's coming to collect the compost bins. And his face looked really good. Now, he's got dark skin, and often with burns on the dark skin, you know, you can really see the difference. But and about the next day, I looked at his leg, and the blister had burst. And underneath the blister was new skin. Isn't that incredible? Just incredible. And they were all amazed. Do you remember what they wanted to do? They wanted to take him to hospital. And I can understand, because what the dressing they'd put on, it was not getting a response. And if you're not getting a response, oh, that's what you've got to do. But when I saw what they'd done, I thought they didn't realize what you've got to do. You've got to leave that skin on. And then a lady contacted me. She's a friend of mine. She said, a friend of mine had an accident with boiling water and burnt her chest and all down her arm, and the skin's just falling off. She's been to the doctor, and the doctor said right in the middle here, they call that the first degree burns, when, you know, it's the first layer of skin is gone. The third degree burn is usually just the top layer. And the doctor wants her to go to Sydney, which is 5 hours away. And he thinks she'll have to have skin grafts, and it's possible she'll never have the full use of her arm again. Now, she had twin boys who were two and another little four-year-old. And the husband's working, so they were in a dilemma. What do we do? And my friend said to them, I know a lady that I think can help. And so I said to them, put the aloe on straight away, get the strips and put it on straight away. And then I could not see them till the next afternoon. So I met them at our mutual friend's house, who's got this huge crop of aloe vera. And there was about 10 people there all watching to see what's going to happen. And when I looked at the arm, it wasn't as bad as I thought it would be. There was only really a small part that was quite raw. And her husband was standing there frowning. She said, my husband's not happy. He wants me to go to Sydney. He wants me to go to hospital. You know, he thinks I'm going to lose the use of my arm. And so I said to him, I can understand how you feel, but let's just give this a try. I've seen it do incredible things. And I said, the arm isn't as bad as I thought it would be. He said, okay. And so I did the same thing with the arm. And we needed about three people to hold this slimy aloe on. And then when we'd put it all around the arm, we put cling wrap around it and then bandaged it on. And she said that made an incredible relief. The chest was looking quite good because she'd already had the aloe on there, but she hadn't been able to secure it properly here and it was still hurting. And I said, don't change it for 24 hours. Why not for 24 hours? Because what happens is the skin starts to heal. And if you change it too much, you disrupt that healing skin. And you'll find in hospitals today, sometimes they don't change them for 2 days, 48 hours. Because that's what they've found. Sometimes 3 days, yeah? Sometimes 3 days. And so I didn't do the next dressing, you know, that I'd shown them, and the house where we went to, I think they just went there because they all saw what to do. And one of the reasons why they decided to go with the aloe vera is she felt so good. She said once that was on, her pain levels went right down. And when the husband saw her relaxed and happy, and I said to him, aloe vera has a growth stimulant, I think this can do it. Now, he was happy to go with that, because if they did go to Sydney, he was going to have to find someone to mind the twins and the little, and he was going to have to get time off work, and, you know, it gets incredibly complicated. So that also won him. And I didn't hear from them again, but I did hear from our mutual friend, and she said, oh, it's healing very nicely. That's all I heard. But 2 months later, I was going to see my local cranial sacral chiropractor, who's a very clever guy in fixing backs. And just before I went in to see him, they came out of the room. And they just came out of the room like this. And when they looked up and saw me, they went, "Ah, Para!" It's like a celebrity had just walked in the room. And the husband's just smiling like this. And they were just smiling. They just told me everything. And she pulled up a jumper. She said, "Look." Do you know, you couldn't even not see that there'd been a problem there. She said, "Look, I've got full use of my arm." So it's certainly worth a try, isn't it, yeah?
What did the doctors say to them about the little...
Well, they actually didn't go back to the doctor. Because what the doctor had done is he'd given them a referral to a specialist in Sydney, and they basically just rang up and said, we've got another opinion. You never say, we're going to get an alternate. Alternative, thank you. We're going to get an alternative opinion, because as soon as you say alternative, they immediately think you're going into something that many doctors and nurses think is like quackery. Not all doctors and nurses think that. I know some doctors and nurses that don't think that at all. But unfortunately, some do. And it totally healed. So aloe vera is just like a miracle, miracle herb. And that's why when I first moved into my house 10 years ago, I planted aloe vera and comfrey all around my house. I did that before the house was even renovated to live in. Yeah.
Now, how long did it take her to...
You know that I think she placed the aloe vera. She said she only needed to place the aloe vera on the skin on her chest for about, 48 hours she did that. You see, the skin grows very quickly, and once the skin is there, you know, you're safe. But I think she did this for about 6 days. I think she had to do it for about 6 days. She wanted to be doubly sure, and of course there was that very tender raw bit there. And I think it got to the point where she found that she didn't have to do the rest, and she just targeted that a few more days after that. You see, your body's response is your guide. And I never spoon-fed my children. I encourage them to think for themselves and be independent. And I certainly do it with people that we're helping with health. You teach and you show, and then basically you leave them with it. You're there to advise. But if they say, "Well, how often will I do it?" I'd say, "Well, see what it feels like. And if it starts to hurt, do it again," etc.